this week. The most major of them was Marine Corps birthday.
Yes.
That was Friday. And that's definitely more important than Veterans Day. The Marine Corps birthday, 248 years old, we're more important. It just always has been. That's just the way it is. So, because 248 years. The Marine Corps was formed by a writ for the Constitutional Congress on November 10th, 1775, and it was formed at Tun's Tavern in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We were born in a bar. Typical Marines, huh? 1775. That's when the first contingents of Marines were born. That's why we're more important, because the veterans didn't come to after the Marines did. We were before. That's why we're more important. But we had Veterans Day yesterday, and understand that Veterans Day is there for we have Memorial Day, which is signifies the ones that have left and never come back. But we have Veterans Day to pay homage to the people that served their country. And there's some 20 million people still alive to this day that have served their country in the United States. Now, the percentage of people that serve or want to serve coming out right now is very low. It's a sad state, kind of akin it back to the 60s and 70s where they had to put the draft in. And then we kind of had a blossom, and then all of a sudden it's tied in with the other direction. But it's a sad time right now. But just to let y'all fix folks know, us veterans don't consider ourselves heroes. I personally don't like being thanked for my service. I don't. Because when somebody says thank you for your service, it brings up to me the men that didn't come back. I was just doing a job. It was a job I signed up for. I think it was a very important job, but it was a job. And yeah, I like I said, I just, to me, somebody, and I will say always thank you for acknowledging that, but to me, it's like, and most veterans will tell you that, because it brings up memories of friends that never came back and everything like that paid the ultimate price. Their family served, yeah. If you were in a family, if you were a wife or a child of the service, you served right along with them. You got drug around all over the place. Your military family members got to go out and have all the fun while you had to stay back in the base. You know, I was gone for a year to Japan. I was always going out to the field, and then, you know, I served my time over in Saudi and all that other stuff. And it was hard for other people, especially when you're deployed to a zone, to a combat zone. And understand that any time one of our military service members are deployed, it's a combat zone. It can light off at any particular time, at any time. There's been 48 attacks as of yesterday. I'm not reading the new morning. From Hezbollah onto our troops in our Iraq. We still have troops in Iraq.
That's what's reported.
But there has been a bunch of attacks.
They're not true.
They're not true. They're not doing drones attacks on them. Yeah. See, I heard that no Americans have died, but yeah. But we're attacking Syria already. It's amazing how politicians will get us into a war whenever their kids don't have to go. I think that if you're going to get us into a war, you should have to go serve it. But that's just I'm getting into political stuff, and I'm not going to do that. There's a lot of people that, and you know, there's a lot of people that when they get to the age they want to serve and they can't serve anymore because of decisions that they had made coming up. The tattoos and the different stuff. Yeah, but used to, well, I couldn't have a tattoo below my sleeves. I couldn't have a tattoo that showed. Now they waver for that, they waver for drugs, they waver for all kinds of stuff. It's crazy. Anyway, enough of that. We're in Genesis today, Genesis 19:30. So, Westlake, would you open up yourself in prayer this morning? Okay, so now to remember what happened last week, where we're at. We had some stuff coming down from the sky that destroyed some cities last week, right? Fire and brimstone come down on Sodom and Gomorrah. And there's this guy named Lot. And Lot is Abraham's brother. Oh, nephew. And whenever Abraham was kind of bartering with God about, well, if there's so many righteous people in there and down there, God, would you spare them? And he got him down to five righteous people. And God went in there, and even though he didn't find five righteous people, he found Lot. And by his own grace and his mercy, he allowed Lot to come out of that thing because he was a righteous man. And whenever he brought Lot out, he said, run to the mountains. Don't look back. Run to the mountains and don't look back. Well, what did Lot say? Lot says, wait a second. Whoa. I'm a city boy. Let me go to this small city over here. And I will live in that city and it'll be fine and everything like that. And God said, okay, he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah and all the cities on this plain, but he allowed that one city to be fine. Why? Because Lot wanted to go there. So this city was called Zoar. And the reason why it was called Zoar, because that means little city, and it was a little small city. Or a town, or whatever you want to call it. And Lot went to Zoar. So he went to Zoar, and when he got to Zoar, he got there and he didn't like it very much. And I don't know why. Why do you think that when he got to Zoar, all of a sudden he couldn't stomach it anymore, and he ended up going to the mountains anyway? He can stomach that. He stomached Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't know about that. Yeah, God has a way of putting us where he wants us to be anyway. Imagine coming into this town and you're the only people that survived this catastrophe around. And all of a sudden this elderly man or older man and these two young girls come in, and they come into this town. What do you think the townspeople are doing? Wait a second, all those places come down around here. And these strangers are here. How did y'all survive? Why are y'all here? I could see it not being a very hospitable place for them at that particular time. So, he gets there, and evidently it's not a place for him. God decides to move him on, however we do this. And so Lot goes, in verse 19:30 it said, and Lot went out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave with his two daughters. So, There were some issues about dwelling Zoar. There was a fear there, whether it's a fear of the people, whether whatever that fear is, there was a fear of even wanting to live down there, even though he made a bargain with God to go live there. God spared these people so he could go live there. And then he gets there. We're a bunch of fickle people, aren't we? We're never satisfied, are we? So they're living in this tent. They go up into, not a tent, they go into this cave in Zoar. And this is the Moab Mountains, by the way. It says, and the firstborn said to the younger, they're talking about his daughters. The firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us after the manner of all, after the manner of all the earth. In other words, he says, she's saying to it, you know what? Our father is here. There's no other man around left on the earth to come in and impregnate us so that we could carry on the father's line. They just came from the city. Now, unless that is a city of only women, they know that there are men on earth. Can we say that they really thought that this means that there was no man left on earth? Do you think they believe that? Also, and that could be it. Well, what about this? Do you think that there's strangers coming in from this man that probably was known to live in the city that was destroyed? And they come into this little small town, and we know how small towns are, right? When you come into a small town, until you have two or three generations of family, you're still an outsider. It's true. That's the way it looks. Even in our day and age, you're an outsider. You're not from here. You're from California. You're from New York City. Get a rope. Remember the old commercial? I love that commercial. Yeah, taste picante sauce. But you're an outsider. So maybe when they went to this city, maybe they were got so much pushback from who they are. Maybe this, whenever they come, they have to leave and they go up into this mountain with their father. Maybe all of the young men that they knew around were not even destined to come unto them because they knew what their background was. Maybe that's it. But we know that the daughters at least thought unto themselves that there's not a man out there that would come to them and give them a baby. So they come up with a plan. And it's a bad plan, as most human plans are, but they come up with a plan. They said, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him that we may preserve the seed of our father. We're doing this for him. Do you not think they know this is wrong? Do you see the degradation of their morals that has happened from living in this town that they come from? But you'll see later they know that it's wrong. They're inwardly, they know this ain't right. But the human fleshly man, or the flesh that lives in us, this sin nature is in us, it's going to find a way. It doesn't care. So they come up with this plan, and they say, let's get our father drunk. Let's get our father drunk, and then we'll go in and we'll lie with him, and that way we will preserve his seed down through the nation, down through the times. So they made their father drink wine that night, and they went in, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he perceived not when she laid down or when she arose. Now, does this mean that the guy was totally inebriated to the point that he could not, he was just like quiet, you know, passed out? No. The man can't be passed out. If a man passed out, he can't do what he has to do to impregnate a girl. What it's saying here is that this man was so inebriated that he had lost all sense of what was going on around him, and he totally blacked out, and he performed what he had to, what he performed, and didn't even realize that it was his daughter doing it. And he allowed his daughters to be around him. He is just as at fault as they are. He allowed them to do it. We're supposed to protect our children, are we not? And we have failed protecting our children here in this United States. Do you see what we allow our kids to watch on television? Are we even any better than this man? As a nation? No. So, he come in at night and then perceived that he didn't even know that she lay down. And it came to pass on the morrow, and the firstborn said unto the younger, behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also, and go thou in and lie with him, that we may preserve the seed of our father. Well, if one of them was already impregnated, the seed's already preserved, right? So it's kind of like, come on in and enjoy this sinful thing along with me. Isn't it amazing how we, that once we indulge ourselves in sin, we want to reach out and bring everybody else into that too? It's nature, right? It's that fleshly nature. Let's get everybody involved in it. And sin, when you look at it, it's a smiling, beautiful woman. At least for a man. It's what you want it to be. It calls for you. It drags you in. It's a seductress. Or seductor. I don't want to be chauvinist up here. So it came to pass, so they made their father drink wine also that night also, and the younger one arose and lay with him, and he perceived not when she lay down and she arose. Again, he was so drunk and so out of it that he didn't even know that his daughter had come into him and he had done the act with her. Thus were both daughters of Lot with child by their father. And the firstborn was named Moab. And the same is the father of the Moabites to this day. And you know, the neat little thing is that where they were at, that became Moab. That's where the Moabites stayed, in that one little area where they were at. And they grew up, and they had that Lot's little clan grew into the Moabites. And the younger bare also a son. His name was Benami. Hope I said that. Benami? Anybody got a better one? Ben-Ami. Okay. And the same was the father of Ammon to this day, what they call the Ammonites. Okay? They settled a little bit north of where the Moabites settled. And there was a neat thing in Deuteronomy, if you ever get to Deuteronomy. And it says in Deuteronomy 2:9, I can bring up my little, there it goes. Okay, I love computers. It says, then this is after they come back out of Israel. It says, and the Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in a battle, for I will not give thee their land for possession, because I have given it unto the children of the Lot for possession. So when they came into that land, that was protected. If you look in Deuteronomy 2:19, it says, and when you comest nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them, for I will not give thee the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because they have given it, for I have given it unto the children of Lot as a possession. So God kind of honored what was going on there. I don't know why. I don't know why. But because Lot was the nephew of Abraham, and his line was the Moabites and the Ammonites, whenever the children come out to take the land, he's like, leave them alone. Leave them alone. I have given those that land because of Lot. So, yes, ma'am? Yeah, that something comes into that later. If you go to Ruth, she's a Moabitess. So that comes back into the Lord's lineage, doesn't it? But I didn't want to go that far. I don't want to run down that rabbit trough. But you're right. And this is pretty much the last time you hear Lot right here, isn't it? It's like he rolls off of the tablets of history. Anybody got anything on that before we move on to the next? Okay. Now we're going to Abraham. Abraham got up and he moved. Remember that whenever Abraham was seen, he saw the fires come down in the valley down there, right? He saw the fires of Sodom and Gomorrah burning. So he decided to journey on a little bit. So Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country and dwelled between the Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. I'll call it Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, "This is my sister." And Abimelech the king of Gerar sent and took Sarah. Okay, first off, Abimelech is kind of like a name given to like the king, the overall princes of the area. You'll hear Abimelech throughout scripture, but it's not the same Abimelech. It's more of a title type thing. But this is like the king of the princes of that era. Okay, so he comes down and he comes to Gerar, or Ger, I don't know, Gerar. Gerar. And when he gets there, he does the same thing he did in Egypt. Has this man not learned his lesson? Does he not fully trusted in God yet, that God's going to protect him and take care of what he said he was going to do? Has he not seen enough already? But no, he comes here and he goes and tells him that Sarah is his wife, that Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "This is my sister." And Abimelech, the king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Now, this is a prerogative of kings. You see the one where they're sent out and they gather all the beautiful women into the kings. Can't think of that one. Esther. Where they gather all the beautiful women, all the comely women, and put them in the king's harem. It's not nothing unusual done during this particular time. Understand that women didn't have the same worth that we account to women to this day. And in fact, if you get into the worth given to women in the Gospels and all up into Paul's writings, what the height that Paul gave women was amazing for the day. But I'm not getting into that. But anyway, so it wasn't unusual for them to go out and get the pretty women. Now, how old was this woman? Sarah. About 90? 89? But she was evidently still a beautiful woman. And this was done before Maybelline. Okay? So, he goes out and he basically he takes Sarah. Well, evidently he puts her into the woman's area where all the women go. And God came to Abimelech that in a dream by night, and he said to him, "Behold, thou art a dead man." That would not be something I want to hear from God. "Thou art a a dead man. For the woman which thou had taken, for she is a man's wife." You're a dead man because you took another man's wife and put them into your harem. God don't play, does he? But Abimelech had not come nearer. So Abimelech had not took and done any carnal knowledge with her. He had not even came near. Basically, she was put in the woman's section and cooped up for later, okay? He would have got to it when he got to it. But right now, he had not gotten near. He had not touched her yet. So he said, "Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation?" Said he unto me, "She is my sister, and she even herself said, 'He is my brother.' And the integrity of my heart and innocency of my hands, have I done this?" In other words, God, I was lied to. I was not only lied to by the man, I was lied to by the woman, and I had no inkling that this woman was married. That doesn't make what he done right, does it? You shouldn't be taking women away from their families. But he did not physically touch her yet. And he was tricked into doing this. If Abraham had said, "This is my wife," do you think he would have reacted the same way? I hope not. But if we look later on, this is an honorable man later on. We'll see that a little bit. But so Abimelech said to God, he's like, "God, I was tricked into this. I was lied to. That they did not tell me she was married. In fact, they told me that they were sister and brother." So God said to him in a dream, "Yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore, suffer I thee not to touch her." In other words, I understood this. I understood that you were tricked. In fact, I arranged in my own time to keep you away from her so that you would not violate her in any way. Why could she not be violated? What is her purpose? What is the purpose of Sarah? She is supposed to bring the baby, but not only that, the baby of the promise. The promise will come through her. God can't have her sold by anybody else. The promise has got, she's being held out until time when God wants to make his move. Even though she's tried to help out, he's like, no, we're not doing it your way. We're going to do it my way. And I'll do it on my time. Thank you for trying to help out. I don't need your help. So he came to him and said, I held you back from doing this. I withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore, I suffered thee not to touch her. I stopped you from doing this. He says, Now therefore restore this man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if you restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. So in other words, this is what I want you to do. Give her back to her husband. Give her back to her husband. When you do that, he'll pray for you. This guy that lied to you and tricked you is now going to pray for you so that you, why? Because he is the prophet to me. He's not perfect, is he? But he is God's prophet. He has a special place for God. Are we perfect? But we're still God's children, right? So this, he said he'll pray for you, and that. But if you don't do this, if you continue down this road that you have, that has been started, not only you will die, but everybody that is of you will die. What's Abimelech's reaction? What did Abimelech do? I love Abimelech's action here. Therefore, Abimelech rose early in the morning. He got up bright and early. And the first thing he did, he called all his servants together and told them all these things that God had told him. He says, and told all things in these ears, and the men were sore afraid. In other words, guys, I need to tell you about this. God came to me last night, and we've been tricked, and if we don't do this, we're all going to die. And they were so afraid of this. And then Abimelech immediately, he called to Abraham, and he said unto him, "What hast thou done unto us? What have I done to offend thee, that thou brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done." Abraham, what did I do to you to deserve this? Why did you do this to me? Do you realize that you have brought this disaster upon not only me, but my entire kingdom? A little lie, a little simple lie brought disaster to a man and could have took down a whole kingdom. And you know his son will do the same thing later on, but that's a totally different story. We'll probably get to that later. So he get to him and he's like, "What have I done to you? Why have you done this to me?" And Abraham said unto Abraham, "What sawest thou that thou hast done this? What did you see in me to think that you had to do this? What purpose in your heart? What did I do to you that might you thought that I was going to kill you?" Well, he's going to reason here. "But why did you have to do this to me? What did I do?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake." Abraham went into this place thinking that they're a bunch of heathens and they don't fear God. That was his first mistake, right? Should we walk into thinking nobody knows God in any place? He had already made up in his mind whether they were saved or unsaved. Well, in our talking, okay? Whose job is it to determine whether somebody's saved or not saved? God's, not mine. So he already purposed in his mind that you were a bunch of heathenly, godless people, so that when the minute I walked in this place, you were going to slay me for my wife's sake. In other words, you're going to slay me and take my wife. Then he goes to say, "Yet indeed, she is my sister. I wasn't really lying. She is my sister. I am her brother." It wasn't really a lie, was it? But you held back the truth that the man needed. You could say that we're brother and sister, but we're also wife. I wouldn't do that today. That would be very much frowned upon. But in that particular time, it happened. So he says, yet indeed she is my sister. She's the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. She's my half-sister. So, from a certain point of view, we are brothers and sisters. It's amazing how we rationalize our lives, isn't our sins, is it not? Yes, ma'am. Yeah. But it's hard to say believer and unbeliever here because what are they believing in? You know, it's kind of, that's our terminology, isn't it? And it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house that I said to her, this is thy kindness which thou shalt show unto me, that every place whether we shall come, you say that you say to me, he is my brother. In other words, we had this thing worked out from the way back when that any time we go into a new place, we're going to be brother and sister. It's pre-planned, is it not? And now it's dad the downfall. It's kicked back on him twice, the two different places. Once in Egypt, now here. Now in Egypt, whenever they done, they did what? They gave him a bunch of stuff and sent him away, right? Abimelech does something a little different. What does Abimelech do? He says he took sheep and oxen and men servants and woman servants and gave them unto Abraham and restored Sarah his wife. So in other words, he took and he gave all a bunch of different stuff to Abraham and said, you know what, I've wronged you. Even though you lied to me, I've wronged you. And you are a prophet of this God that come to visit me in the night. Let me give you these things. Let me honor you in this way. I will give you manservants. I will give you maidservants. Sheep, oxen. I can see why he's telling this lie. Every time he tells this lie, he gets richer. So he says to him, he's like, take all this stuff and I'm going to restore Sarah to you. I haven't touched her. If I did, I'd be dead right now. I have not touched her. I'm going to give you back your wife. He goes on to say, and Abimelech said, behold, my land is here for thee. Dwell where it pleases thee. I'm not even sending you away. Let me tell you something. I got some good pasture land out there. Wherever you want to be, go. Go sit out there. I will not mess you. My people will not mess with you. Go out there and live your life. And he said to Sarah, behold, I have given thy brothers 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is the covering of thy eyes unto all that are with thee and to all others. Thus was she reproved. In other words, he said to her, I have given a recompense to your brother for what I've done to y'all. He is your covering. And now I have given you back to him whole and untouched. Whenever he had done this, Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had closed up the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah and Abraham's wife. Or Sarah, Abraham's wife. It's amazing. This has probably happened over... I kind of figured this didn't happen in one day. This was like she was taken and there was some time going on here and everything because people had gotten sick and it's like, I don't think it happens overnight. But you see, what is the reaction from the supposedly godless people? They feared God, But even if they feared God, they didn't. Did they not treat Abraham better than he treated them? There's a lesson in that for us, is it not? Should we not treat that unbeliever well? How are we ever going to get an unbeliever to believe if we don't treat him properly? It's amazing. That's what we're called to do. That's kind of where we're going to stop today. If anybody got anything else that I missed that we think we need to go through on that particular area? Man, it's quiet. Here, crickets chirping. I didn't even have to ask for a word this morning, I don't think. I was talking to Wesley yesterday, and we were talking about how he did his sermon, and the first one was kind of like a little slow and awkward to get going, and then the second one he was much better in. But it's easier doing this, because when you're standing up in the pulpit and you have a thought that you want to go through, and all of a sudden those little birds come in and snatch it out of your head and it flies away. Here I can think and borrow y'all. I'm like, I give y'all an idea, and so all of a sudden somebody will pop off and give me the right word or the right theme or the right something that I need to move on to the next one. And it's a little different when you're up there, because you're expected to have all the answers. Not only that, but you have got to let people know what you want to teach, and you have to paint the picture for everybody, and the picture has got to be good enough so that everybody can see it. And here we kind of could discuss it, because I'll paint you a picture, and then maybe Ruth will come in and give some like color over here, and then, you know, Wesley will come in and draw like a bunny rabbit over here, and you know, different stuff comes in. So this is more of a, I really love the way this teaches. I told him yesterday that if he wants to ever teach some of my class, I'll definitely let him have some time if he wants to come up here, because it's a different way of teaching, and it's a different atmosphere you teach through. So anyway, I think I've blathered on enough for this morning. So Mike, would you close us in prayer, sir?